where there's a lot of poverty, there's a lot of surviving going on. And when there's a lot of surviving going on, a lot of times people aren't necessarily identifying the best programs or organizations or even concerns. They're trying to survive, right? What we realized was, oh, no one's giving out books in these communities, right? There's a huge book shortage in our community. We've given out, by the end of this year, we'll be right around 300,000 books donated in the Philadelphia area just by us two. We came in, we read for 30 minutes to a half an hour. We invite families in. We show them a fun, engaging way of reading with kids. We do an active reading training within that. We do dyslexia awareness. We do diabetes awareness. And we leave the kids with what we call dad bags now. They get books in there and they get some resources around early literacy.
Hello and welcome to the Black and Dyslexic Podcast with Winifred A. Winston and LaDerrick Horn, the show that unapologetically focuses on helping Black and underrepresented minorities navigate the special education process. We want to help raise awareness in the Black and brown community, remove the stigma about learning disabilities, and provide you access to professionals in the space of dyslexia and special education that you need to hear from. Hello, and welcome to another episode of the Black and Dyslexic Podcast. Today, we have two gentlemen with us. I'm so excited. We've got Akeef Staples and Brent Johnstone. Now, these young men met while playing football at Temple University out in Philadelphia, and they wanted to help young men in their community and really tackle the reason why so many ended up in the juvenile justice system. And through their research, they learned that most couldn't read. How about that? And this led them to start Fathers Read 365. Welcome.
Welcome, brothers. Welcome. Welcome.
Hello.
Thank you. Great to be here. Pleasure to be here.
Yes. Yeah. So tell us how you guys started Fathers Read 365 and what really resonated that made you say, look, we've got to figure out what's going on here.
Well, in the beginning, we actually were running five programs for our community at one time, all based around engaging fathers and really around basing fathers coming home, trying to get them engaged with their children. But through that, one of the programs we developed was called Fathers Read 365. And we thought, you know, some type of fathering reading program, we'll figure it out as we go. And as we started running those first five programs, we realized it's probably best not to run five programs at once. Mm-hmm. And we looked at which one could be the most impactful. And that's when we started really digging into our studies around early literacies, fathers engaging with early literacy. And we really thought, you know what? Fathers Read is probably where we could be the most impactful for this reason. Mainly, we could be proactive in this whole fight against brothers coming in and out of the prison systems. We could be proactive instead of reactive, right? We were looking to work with dads as they came home. And we were like, you know what, let's take a more proactive approach to it. And the biggest way we thought could be teaching children, helping children and families learn how to read in that early literacy space. So Fathers Read was really born out of that. How can we help our community in the most impactful way? And we believe that early literacy is that space.
Oh, that's great. That's great. Now you have on dyslexic, the audience can't see, you have on a wonderful t-shirt here, dyslexic and proud. Are you dyslexic?
Very much so. Found out as I was selling out of school at Temple University, this is Brent Johnstone speaking, or Mr. B as I'm known in Fathers Read 365 world. But yes, found out one day I gave my academic specialist, Karen Williams, a paper. And she read it for like 1 minute and she turned and she looked at me and she said, have you ever been tested? And honestly, that day changed my life. I said, tested for what? She said, dyslexia. I said, no. She said, I think we should get you tested. And that's where it started for me.
Oh, so you got all the way to college.
Yep.
You got all the way to college.
It was about to be through with college in a second if I didn't get no help. Because I did fell out college at one point. And I knew that was going to happen. I got there playing football, had very minimum grades. But yes, I found out in college very late in life.
Okay.
Brother Keith, we can pull you in here. When we talk about early literacy, what do you mean by that? Just for the folks who may just be lay people listening, and like, what years are we talking about where a young person is engaging in literacy?
When we're talking about early literacy, we're looking at that 0 to 5 year age range. And when we're saying zero, you know, I have three children myself, is even reading to the kids when they're in the womb. So we could start as early as when they're in the belly, but we strongly encourage that parents, especially fathers, are engaged in that process very early on, because it sets those kids up for positive outcomes. We're not saying that this is the perfect remedy for every child, but statistics do show that when men are engaged and reading and practicing and saying words, that it works wonders for the children, boys and girls.
Your organization, you're working primarily in Philadelphia, is that correct?
We are primarily in Philadelphia and surrounding areas here. We also have ventured over to New Jersey, South New Jersey, in the Camden and Pensauken area.
Okay. Are there any sort of distinct sort of challenges that you see, like in working with community, you know, with families in Philadelphia, now making this jump into South Jersey, sort of the distinctions between the two kind of groups of communities?
Between the two, I don't think there's a big distinction. I think they're both, you look at Camden, New Jersey, at one point it was when I worked there, it was the most impoverished city in the country. Philadelphia is the most impoverished big city in the country. So, and they're literally a bridge apart from each other. So the similarities are very same, probably the same true in Baltimore or other, you know, cities that are similar, St. Louis, where there's a lot of poverty, there's a lot of surviving going on. And when there's a lot of surviving going on, a lot of times people aren't necessarily identifying the best programs or organizations or even concerns. They're trying to survive, right? And sometimes when you're trying to survive, that's all you get caught up into doing, and you don't realize how to spread your wings. You don't realize where these resources are. And a lot of times you're living in communities that they're being, for years, they've been held away from. Like, we know what people need to survive, right? We know what schools need to be, quote unquote, good schools. And these communities haven't received them. So there's a generation of people who don't even realize that most of the men in their family or most of the people in their family can't read, because they just been surviving and working hard and doing what they need to be doing. And that's just the norm for them. So sometimes I think when we speak to people, they don't even realize, wow, that's what's going on in my life. And what you mean we don't have good reading teachers here? I love Miss So-and-so who teaches my daughter reading, not knowing that she's not teaching your daughter how to read. You just learn like a person. So, yes, yeah, so some of that is a lot of what's going on in these communities is that survival. And that's not the best practice to living a great life.
Yeah, yeah.
The communities we serve, where we target is the poverty-stricken communities. You know, we target low income. We go where we see the test scores are low, where unemployment can be high. We want to go to the areas. We've identified the areas and communities where we can make a difference, because that's where we saw the kids on the back end or the adults on the back end in that criminal justice system. These are the areas that they're coming from. And can we go anywhere? Can we go to the suburbs? Yes. We need these services everywhere, because as we know, about 1 in 5 individuals live with some form of dyslexia. However, we do want to serve our people the best that we know how.
Is there a story you might be able to share with the audience to kind of give us an idea of the impact of the work? You know, I don't know, just something that kind of illustrates what you do and how you do it and the impact.
So it's a story I like to share. Early on, we started by just going into daycares, reading with children, inviting their dads in and showing dads this fun, engaging way of reading, preaching. They only had to do it 15 minutes a day. So we get to this one school. We get there a little early, and it's a dad there early. He's already there. And from the moment we get there, he's like, yo, I got to go. I ain't going to have time. Like, how long is this going to be? And we like, you know, don't worry about it, Dad. You know, we got about half an hour, 45 minutes, boom, 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 boom. So we get into it. And we having a ball. This is one of our better sessions. Well, they are great, but we having a great time. Kids engaged, dads engaged. So it gets to the end of the reading. We're there cleaning up after it's over. Who was there helping us clean up after it's over? This is the guy who said, go, I got to leave. I can't. You know, half an hour ago, he had to leave. He ain't got time for this. He's helping us clean up, right? Mm-hmm. He loved it, thanked us, boom. So about, say, a month or two later, I was driving Uber at the time, starting a program, right? I picked up someone from dialysis. It happened to be the same brother. He jumped in. He recognized me. I didn't recognize him. He like, yo, Mr. B. I'm like, yo, what's going on? He's like, yo, I was at. And then it started coming back. Oh, this is the guy who had to leave. His ride was about 25 minutes. And that whole ride, all we talked about was how he started reading with his kid and how he realized how important it was and how him and his kids have their favorite books now. And he thanked me like, yo, thank you guys for what you're doing. And that was one of the times early on when it was like, yo, we really got to keep doing what we're doing, because I know where his kid went to school at. I know where I dropped him off at. You know what I'm saying? And to have that conversation with him and know that we sparked this one man who didn't have time for reading, didn't care about what we were there for, but he was there for his child. Regardless of why we was there, he was there for his child. So now we just loaded him up with more ammo on being a good father, because he was already being a good dad showing up. And just to see how excited he was about reading and reading with his child. And this was something that he wasn't doing, had plans on doing, but now he realized how important it was. It's a lot of stories, but that's one of them that always stands out to me.
Do you get some fathers who themselves struggle with reading? That's why they don't want to try to read, or they never even heard of dyslexia, right? But they know that something is going on. Or they just felt like, nah, I can't do that. I can't do that, because they're struggling.
If I can just add on before y'all respond, because as you're telling this story, I feel like I almost cry every episode. as y'all telling this story, I'm rolling back the times in my life where, you know, there were young people in my family and I wanted to read a story or what have you. But as a dyslexic, I mean, even just, you know, really simple words, if I haven't gone through, there's like some fear there, right?
And it's a lot of fear.
Yeah. And in particularly, you know, you're supposed to be showing up as, you know, Black man, leader in your family, you know, like if, you know, and to have that conversation with a child, like, yo, I'm good at a lot of things, but this thing you asking me to do right now, this is going to be a challenge for me. So yeah, just, you got to encounter brothers that, you know, are dealing with this issue and maybe are confronting that fear.
I just made a post recently on Facebook kind of speaking to this, and we've dealt with it in two ways. I'll tell the part that you're talking to first, and then I'll tell what I'm kind of thinking of second. We were at this school, and we had all grandparents. We were doing this active reading training with all grandparents in North Philadelphia, 23rd and Diamond. If you know, you know, as they say, right? Diamond, the 23rd and Diamond Street Projects. And this was one of the best trainings we ever had. So I'm talking to them about dyslexia, early signs of dyslexia, what they could look for, all this. At the end, this guy corners me. He said, listen, man, I got the dyslexia too. He said, I got it. He said, everything you were talking about, he said, I never heard anyone else say that. He said, I got it too. He was realizing at that moment he had dyslexia. And that's why he said, I got it too. And he said, listen, man, I'm 55 years old. I got twin sons that's 6 years old. And he said, man, they can't read. They got the dyslexia too. He was diagnosing everybody. But he was saying, my boys really, he said, they're struggling so bad with reading. He said, but I struggle with reading. He said, it's just me and them. And he said, I'm tired of suffering in silence. And I was like, yeah, man, because that's what we do. We suffer in silence. And be honest with you, in all of our years of doing this work, he was one of the only men who have come up to me and said, hey, I'm suffering with dyslexia. I need help. Can I get help? Just recently working with this Angela Marks from Reading Aloud here in Philadelphia, she does Wilson's training, right? And we partner with her and we offer this, every session we have, we offer, we t- It's very affordable for them. I mean, very affordable for them. I mean, we offer these services. Parents can come, anyone can come, but we focus on inviting fathers out. So we usually have a lot of fathers out. This year, as we're offering this, come up at the end if you need to be contacted, we could contact you. Only one father came up, and it was for his daughter. And I'm talking about over hundreds of fathers. Only one father came up, and that was for his daughter. No man ever came up and said, hey, can I get that? You don't have to tell us who you need this help with for any of this. You know what I'm saying? Only the women who worked in the daycare centers, that's who came up and got the help. They were getting it for themselves. They was getting it for their kids, and they were getting it for their siblings. One man went up to our chief, and he directed him to come to me. He never came to me. And at our last reading of the school year, I said to the fathers there, I said, listen, we've been offering these services all year. No man has stepped up and said that. And I said, where I'm sitting at right now, 3rd and Erie in North Philadelphia, I know I'm not the only man in this room that's struggling with reading.
Yeah.
Please, if anyone needs the information, please come up. We'll give you the email. It's just an email, right? And tell them Mr. B sent you. No man came up the whole year and asked for help. No man came up and said, hey, this is what I'm dealing with. Your story resonates with me. And as I'm talking, you can see it in some of their faces. And you know just by where we are in statistics what's going on. And that really hit me because I'm like, yo, that's a lot of male ego, right? That's a lot of whatever that is. But that's not a lot of, let me try to do the best for my family that I possibly can. Even though I'm 40, 50, 20, whatever the age is, right? Because we're usually not talking to kids at that point. It's that. And we have to get past that, right? Because by that conversation you talked about with a kid, I had to have that with my daughter, 6 years old, trying to help her with her homework. I used to hate trying to help her with her homework because I'm like, damn, I feel like I'm in school again. And it's only first grade homework. And I had to tell her, like, yo, your dad struggles. Your dad struggles with reading. And that was hard. That was hard.
I would just like to say, you know, Brent, you hit on the word because I was going to say that too. But it's, you know, the male ego, and not saying it's a bad thing, but, you know, it can be present for what we do as far as our engagement performances. When we go to the early childhood education centers, the child care centers, and we invite the dads out. Brent and I are authors of two books, I'm Beautiful, I'm Proud, and Mr. Healthy Snacks. So we were able to share our books. I live with diabetes. So we speak to healthy food choices in these communities as well, where a good amount of them might have the corner store bodega as their source of nutrition. Right. So we talk about fruits and vegetables there. Brent talks about self-esteem, positive affirmations with I'm Beautiful, I'm Proud. So when we're in this session and we're engaging and the fathers are there, like Brent said, there are moments where we'll then direct the conversations directly to the caregivers, whether it's fathers or mothers present. And the word that rings out to me is vulnerability, just being vulnerable. Brent shares his personal stories. And he said, you know, talking to the dads, he knows he's not the only one in there. We want to open the floor and let them know nobody's perfect. We also go through ways, if the parents or fathers are not able to read with their children, how they can open up a book and then do a picture walk. So we try to equip them in this 45-minute session with being champions for literacy, why it's so important, and how the parents and caregivers can engage in that process, whether they know how to do it themselves or not. But, you know, when it comes to men, you know, as far as ego, like Brent said, there's only been a few over the past 7 years that have come up, and we could count them on one hand. And we would like to get more so we can get the services to them.
And we already know from the start of it, when you said we're trying to help them when they come out, we know that when young Black men are coming out, a lot of them struggle with reading. When they was in, that's when you find out they're struggling with reading. So you say, okay, let's be proactive. So if we're going to be proactive to do this thing, that's when we need you listeners, right? You struggling readers, to be like, you know what? Let me receive this. Let me receive this help, because it is a comfortable space because we do this work. And when I say we, I mean Fathers Read 365 and myself, because we want to pour into our community, because we see there's a need. We know, I mean, you guys heard me talk about it. My daughter's father is dyslexic and he didn't know it. And now I know that my brother, my eldest brother from my mother is dyslexic. He's severely dyslexic. He's in his 60s. And the running joke, I'm going to be honest, the running joke, I would call to check on him. And my sister was like, you know, he's still in pre-GED. I said, he's still in pre-GED? Like, we didn't know. But then when I learned about dyslexia, he's like, I'm in pre-GED. They're not teaching me to read. They keep giving me the packets. You know, they keep giving me the packets. And last year I went home to North Carolina for my 30th reunion. And my nephew, this is weird, my nephew was sending him to the store. And I'm watching the exchange. And he's like, I want this. And it's going to say this. And I want this. And I'm looking at my brother like, how are you going to go to the store and get it? And he was like, you want this? You want this? And sure enough, he went to the store and got it all and was right. And when I tell you that was a celebration, that was a celebration. And my brother took Sean Robinson's class on word analysis. And so when I see that, and when I tell y'all, he almost 70. He got to be close to 70 because my other sister's 70. But he still wants to learn how to read. And then he thinks about it and he tells us, like, this was a big part of the problem. And we grew up in Brooklyn, New York in the 80s. So I'm just going to leave that right there. Like
exactly.
That's what I grew up.
He was in the mix.
Exactly. Yeah. And all because he couldn't read. And my mom, who's deceased, what I'm learning now, because now we have conversations and we talk. My mother knew he was different and had him in private school, Afrocentric school. She was trying to figure out how he learned best. But then, you know, the concrete jungle got a hold of him. But I'm just saying this, like, if they have been reading the hundreds and hundreds of men and children, right? And we know that the prison system is full of illiterate men. And then what was the study? 80% were illiterate and 40% were dyslexic. I'm just calling for y'all to speak up and get help. That's what I'm just saying. Like, go ahead and get the help. Pull them to the side. These brothers they cool. They doing this work because they want to help. Pull them to the side and get the help you need, because we're all here to help.
And you know what? We also thought of how best ways, like next year, we'll have QR codes and the information will already be in the bags that we give to the kids to go home with the children. You know, we also realized how can we deliver it better, right? We just got this. It was our first year rolling it out. We were literally just telling, hey, come up and get this email, get this phone number. And trust me, a lot of people did, but it's like, okay, we know what we're dealing with. How can we even get the information out that still helps, right? Leaving the information with the daycare centers there, right? They may feel more comfortable getting it from Miss Tamika than they feel from Mr. B. One day I met this guy. You know what I'm saying? Or once they see that poster there for 2 months, it's like, you know what? I walk past here every day. Let me get some help. Let me finally do this QR code or call this number or write this email. And then hearing your brother's story, it kind of runs into what my father's story was. My father, the last conversation I had with my father, he was 73 years old. He literally, the last conversation he had with me, he said, hey, man, he called me Raul. That's a whole nother story. But he said, hey, Raul, don't ever stop talking about dyslexia. He said, because of that, I finally learned what I've been living with all my life. My dad was 73 years old, literally dying. And he only heard me talk about it, say, the last 4 years of his life. But I wasn't really out speaking about it like that. So for about 60-something years, he didn't know he was walking around. Man, my dad was a lieutenant at Temple Police Force, right? He got through life. He did well in life. But my dad, he never read with us. He set expectations. All four of his kids he had with my mom are college graduates. But when we really look back at it, my dad, when he would read, he never really read. If he read something in front of you, he would say a couple words and he'd do something and say a couple words. But when you looked at it, it was like, damn, my dad really, he was suffering with dyslexia. You know what I'm saying? My oldest brother, he's come to me and said, yo, I've realized that's what I'm suffering with. And my son, he never got tested for dyslexia, but he was showing all the signs that the rest of the men were showing in the family. And that's when I made it I said, damn that, this is not going to keep going on. And that's when I got him Wilson's tutoring. And I saw this kid in third grade be on a kindergarten reading level. And now in fifth grade, I went to pick up a report card. He was like, "Daddy, I'm on level. I'm on level." And I'm like, "What you talking about?" He was like, "I'm on level." And I'm like, "Whatever. Like, report card next week." And went there. And his teacher was like, "Oh my God, he's like the top, one of the top three. He had top three scores in the class." And I'm like, "You serious?" And it's like, "Yeah." And this boy went 2020 when we was home. We talk about it now. Like, he don't mind. He tells me to share a story. He couldn't read. Like, we're trying to read with him, and it was so hard. Like, to see him where he was, to get him that help through Wilson's, and to see where he is now. When he'll look at a word and tell you, "Well, Dad, that word, the E is living silent there. So the word sounds like that because of this." And I'm like, "Oh, shit." And I'm looking at him like, "Yo, it's like, I want this for every child. Like, I want this for all of us, Brother Ladere. Like, I want to be that. Like, I wanted that." And it came from my dad saying, "Don't you ever stop talking about it," right? Because it's like generational. My dad, my older brother, me. Now my sons, and you know, whoever, my nephew has it, right? It's like, we know there's ways to help. How can we help, right? This thing is 1 in 5 people, right? We say, who knows? And our communities is probably way larger than that. And then just the brothers who just haven't been taught to read properly, period, right? They don't even have a reading difference, but they're in the same boat because they just haven't been properly taught. And it's like, we really need to continue to stay warriors in this realm, because this is something we could work on. This is something, not to say we could fix, but we could damn sure be impactful and needle and where we are to where we need to go.
And it's bonding, right? That when your father shared that with you, that was a bond. That's something that you've never forgotten, right? You said, you clearly said, "This is the last thing he said to me." And it was out of that bond. And when your son said to you, "The E is this," and da da da, there's a bonding going on there. My daughter's father, he took the Sean Robinson's class, right? And she came in and she was watching him on the Zoom, and she looked at the book. She said, "Daddy, that's what I'm learning." And he was like, "Yeah, I'm learning it too." So then I heard her say, "Well, pronounce that." And he said it wrong. And then she started explaining the rules to him. And I was like, "Oh my gosh." Like, they started bonding over that because she started telling him the rules. "Now say it this way and remember that." So it made her feel good because she knows that she's a struggling reader, but now she helping Daddy. And, you know, that was some bonding there, right? And just coming together. And so that's so important and huge for us just as Black folks within our family, right? And just really bonding and connecting. And at the end of the day, it's connecting about reading, right? Like reading. How can we read together? Yeah.
The other thing that stood out to me is I would have to think it was pride. You know what I mean? Like, for you to be, you know what I mean? It's like, it's one of, like, I do a lot of work with folks with disabilities sort of generally, right? And so, like, you know, my friends who, you know, are using wheelchairs or, you know, or have visually impaired and have canes, right? You can look at them and kind of understand some of the struggle, right? But for us, we can hide, right? We can pass. We can get through our lives and figure out a lane, you know, and sort of do the best that we can. But, like, it sounded like your father was very successful, you know, and left an amazing legacy. But it also sounded like there was this one little aspect that he wasn't as open about. And now look at you as his son. You're giving words to it. You're conquering it, maybe in a way that he couldn't or didn't.
Ladere, you said something. I think what else we do, we end up fooling people, right? Because if you just talk to me, you ain't thinking I'm struggling reading anything, right?
Right.
I'm Ann Johnstone's son. I know how to use big words. I know how to use them, when to use them. Like, I could talk with the best of them. So when you're talking to me, you're like, there's no way that man is struggling with anything intellectually. And that's what happened. So if I'm in a wheelchair, you're like, oh yeah, I see he's having a problem walking, right? So now when I'm telling you that, oh no, you know, it took me, you saw that nice Facebook post, but it took me 20 minutes to write that damn post. That might have took you a minute, and it still got stuff wrong with it, right?
Right. I had to edit it 3 times, even though it went out, right? Yeah.
Unfortunately, dyslexic, you know, we are great entertainers. We're great wordsmiths and things and such a lot of times. Well, some of us, I ain't gonna say all of us, right? So you can throw people off by just thinking, well, it can't be, all this can't be going on if he's having this conversation with me.
Yeah.
I wanted to to add this in, because like I said, you know, I do not live with dyslexia, but I've learned a ton being with Brent. And I've known Brent now, like you said, you know, we met at Temple almost 3 decades, and he was one of the first individuals like I had a bonding experience with outside of football, literally. Mm-hmm. Him and another gentleman who kind of, you know, took me under their wing. And working with Brent over the past 7 years, like I said, I've learned myself, because for those who do not know, who are on here and, you know, do not know, I thought dyslexia was people did things backwards. You know, they right. went to the bathroom and then they wiped themselves, or, you know, it was
right.
That's what it was to me when I was told what it was. But I learned so much more with him. And in the beginning, you know, because Brent, he's a talker. You wouldn't know. But when he may put things down, and, you know, now we're talking about business. So this is where, like I said, I had to learn to just let him be who he was going to be and not be in a corrective state. Because before, when he was sending emails, I'd be like, oh, you know, you got to adjust this, or you put the post up. And I'm like, you know, adjust this if it was on our page. But then I was like, it got to a point where I was like, you know what? He needs to put out what he's seen. And it's not for me to redirect or adjust. I know where he's coming from. I may have to decipher some of the things and be like, okay, what did you mean here? But it's okay. It's imperfectly perfect. And that's what I learned working with him, is he, just like I live with diabetes, it's a diagnosis. It doesn't say who we are fully. And I know him as an individual, he has so much more that he can offer the world. And I just want him to be in that. And if it is something, you know, that may need to be corrected, we'll correct it. But outside of that, you know, I just like him to be who he is.
And if I could piggyback on that, I would like to say, because of partnerships and working in this world, there's a lot of time when you live with dyslexia, you can feel like less than or intimidated or have low self-esteem. And I remember I always joke, one of the first times when me and Akeith, when I figured out that we were going to work together, I'm telling my wife, and she was like, you know, ask me why. And I jokingly said, I said, man, listen, this dude got good punctuation. Like, he he got good punctuation. He was like, I'm like,
you see the way this brother used a comma? This is amazing.
This man is perfect with them commas. He got the semicolons down. He know when the sentence actually ends. But you know, jokingly, I knew I always needed that, right? And I didn't want to feel like a burden on anyone either, though, right? You know what I'm saying? And I will say, our chief worked very well, because in the beginning it would be like, and he wouldn't do it in like, yo, it's this, like, yo, you need to change. It's just like, yo, you spelt this word wrong on the post. Oh, all right, boom, 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 boom. And like he said, he did stop doing it. And I didn't even actually notice it, right? But because even when he was doing it, I understood, oh, it's about business and just fixing the word that was wrong. It wasn't right. him tell, but maybe if he didn't tell me the way he was telling me, I might have felt like that. So sometimes, because people make a lot of reading jokes and a lot of dumb jokes, and I never forget, I just got a text from her when we were talking. I started this job at this new place, and I was starting it. I started on like Thursday, and the other dean was coming in like on a Monday. So on a Friday, I had to write out this, what was it? An incident report. Wrote it out, and I just kind of, it was in the office. When she got there on Monday, she ended up saying it. And she was like, I see why they called us in here. We got to clean up this. These people can't even write. They can't even spell the word. And when I looked at the paper, I was like, oh, that's my work.
She's talking about my work.
Yeah, but she didn't know it was my work at the time. So I played it off like it was the other person's work. I was like, yeah, they need some. Yeah, they do right. need some. So I played it off like it wasn't mine. But at the time, I was like, that was a hit to the pride. And she actually hired me to do a training for her teachers recently at this charter school. And I bought that up, right? Because we were talking about reading and self-esteem. Now, she never knew that until that day. I said, actually, when we first worked together, and she was like, oh my God, I never realized that. But things like that, like, I used to not go for jobs when I had to know I had to do a lot of writing.
We talk about dyslexics being underemployed and going for jobs that have easy access, right? We all need somebody. When we're in business, we all need somebody to complement an area where we're not strong in. Y'all saw the start of this podcast. I'm ADHD. Did Derek not reel me in? Okay, he's the quiet to my storm. You know what I'm saying? Like, we all need somebody, right? And when we think of business, we think about things that, okay, I'm not good at this, but this person might be good at that. It's just like, he is like, yo, he good with grandma. Like, that's the thing I'm gonna need. That's where he gonna, like, we all need that. And then think about it. So we're thinking about, we mostly help youth, right? And we help the young people, but think about the adults that are in the workplace, right? That are sending emails that are wrong, that can talk, that can speak, but then folks are losing jobs, aren't getting promotions because they're still struggling in the workplace. And how do you go to your supervisor and say, hey, look, I have, or I think I have, or never been diagnosed, but I know I struggle in this area. I don't want to send that email. I don't want to write that report.
Exactly. Yeah. How do you even go, not even your coworker, just a person sitting there like, yo, can you help me spell this word? And it's like, you know, a regular interested, right? It's like, you need help with this word or whatever that is. So how I started speaking out loudly, I will only talk to kids. When I started working in these alternative schools and seeing these kids, I'm like, where I connect with them is reading. I'm a struggling reading. They're struggling with reading. That's causing a lot of it. But I will only talk to kids. Quietly and silos, only by myself. But every once in a while, people will hear me. So when I'm in Camden working, a SPED coordinator, she would hear me speak to the kids. So one day we were doing a PD, all the regional people was in, all the big wigs in. I'm trying to get this promotion. She's doing something on dyslexia. She walks up to me while she's showing. She said, hey, do you want to say anything? I said, no. Like, hell no, I ain't saying anything. Like, the people's going to give me my raises in here. Everyone in the company was there, and no one knows I have dyslexia. I ain't saying a damn thing. Long story short, they were doing something, and I heard people laughing at the kids as they were showing the kids going through what they went through with dyslexia. And I heard people laughing, and I really ain't like the guy. That probably would really set me off. So I called her over to the side. I said, listen, I'll say something. I said, when it's over, I'll say something. So when I went up there, I was like, don't do it. Don't do it. You're going to embarrass yourself. You ain't going to get these raises. But something in me said, they laughing at it. And they ain't going to be laughing at me. And I went up there and I said, I talked for like a half an hour. And when I was done, I was like, what the hell did I just do? Like, it's over for me. Like, I'm not going to get these raises. Whatever. Everyone is clapping, but I'm feeling like, why did I do that? And when it was lunchtime, and when I sat down, I'm like, what the hell did I just do? All these teachers came around me, and they just started firing off questions. And it hit me at that moment, like, wow, I can't just help these kids that I meet on a loan and these little huddles, and that's what's going to help people. These teachers are the people that can help. And if more of them are know about what's going on, they can help more children. And then that made me feel good. That's when I started feeling good. So I was like, well, I can help more people through spreading this message. And that's what literally started me speaking loudly, outrightly, shouting from the rooftops about having dyslexia, being a struggling reader, and just awareness around it, period. Because at the time, I couldn't send you nowhere to get no help. I didn't know about Wilson's or OG or none of that. I didn't know about anyone else in dyslexia. I thought I was literally the only person out here in the world talking about dyslexia. And that's what started me was, you know, speaking to like that whole being embarrassed and worried about getting a job, the promotions and all that other stuff. I was like, the hell with it. Ended up getting a promotion right after that and all of that.
Can I ask? So I really appreciate this conversation. And I hear that you all are doing work. It's dyslexia literacy around making healthy food choices as well. But then I want to bring it back to the piece around corrections. How are you connecting with the brothers who are coming out of the system to get them connected to your program?
Well, that's developing. The main way we're doing it right now is through the daycare system, right? Inviting these guys in areas. We don't know specifically if these guys are coming home or not. We do know the areas that we are serving are the areas that are the pipeline, so to speak, towards the prison system. So we do know that, right? And we're coming in and we engage with them, man to man, face to face, old school type of engagement. That's literally one of the ways we're working with. Actually, about to speak with one of our funders around right before the pandemic, we were actually looking to go into the prison. We had the head of the prison system, the head of the library system, and us in a reading program out here. And that kind of, you know, pandemic hit and that washed away. But literally right now, the only way we're doing it, I would say, is through the daycare centers.
Yeah, it hasn't been, like Brent said, when we first started out, that was the focus. But once we got on the wave of being proactive and working in the centers, and, you know, if we come across fathers who may have been, you know, in the prison system, which we have, and they always say, hey, man, you know, love what you guys are doing, whether they have been or not. They love what we're doing. We haven't given up on that interaction or engagement. Business-wise, we said we have to do, you know, as far as our time is concerned, we have to do what makes sense right now. So, you know, we'll keep planting these seeds. And when the time comes, you know, because it's only Brent and myself, we did hire a couple other individuals as far as an assistant, grants and development manager. And we always had two audio visual technicians who will, you know, follow us around, do some recordings, do some PSAs, create things there. But it's really just been us two. So we just had to make a conscious effort on our time and where we're putting it. But we've always talked about how can we get back into engaging those fathers coming home.
That's a great segue for actually starting the nonprofit, right? And that piece of it, because oftentimes we are doing the work, but we know, and you guys know now, like we have a nonprofit, and I started off with 3 or 4 programs at once, and it was just me. Okay. Mm-hmm. I was flying that plane, building it. It was crashing. And then I'd get up and it was still going and it was out of gas. Then I mean, it was a hot mess. But on the outside, it looked good, right? Mm-hmm. But I was really struggling. And then I had to make that decision. Where can I have the most impact? But not only where do I have enough capacity? Because then we have to build capacity to build. And then how do we get the money? Because we're on the ground doing the work. But in order to grow and scale, we got to be able to hire people. Right. Yep. And like you said, okay, now we're going to start with this one program. And once it's up and profitable and running, now I can add another program. But then how do we get that funding? Because we got to pay attention to where the money is coming in.
Right.
Right. And what laws are changing, or how can we impact laws so that we can get the funding that we need? And why is the funding always going to these bigger places that ain't really doing nothing, but have our pictures on their website and saying that they're helping us?
Yep. And that was one of the starts too, why we picked fathers really. I remember being at a mayor's event, and I was just hearing out the funding money that was going on. And Akeith and I was in that time of what we were going to do, which program we were going to focus on. That also, outside of the statistics and all of, you know, the good sounding stuff, right? I'm like, yo, I think it's a lot of money in early literacy. I think we could find some funding here, right? I don't know about working out with these kids to some of the other stuff that we were doing, but I was like, out of all the things we're doing, the one is presented to be heavily funded and where the needle was starting to go with this grade level reading and all this, it was that early yet. So one of the things is I think a lot of times we get confused with people doing charity work, people doing something good as a nonprofit, or we get it all confused. Like, people love what it seems like it's going well because you're doing good work in your community, right? She's helping. And that's what they don't know, the business of running a nonprofit. They don't know the business of getting funding, making yourself eligible for funding, how to get funded, all of that. And that is where a lot of us get lost. And that is where a lot of the gatekeeping happens too, because we don't understand what we need. A young lady, just say someone told us they will help us understand this game. They love what we're doing so much that they will help us understand how to get to the funding. Now, the reason why they said that at that time was, Akeef and I did this for 2.5 years with absolutely no money. And even when we started getting money, our first money we got was what, $12,000, and almost all of it had to go to
consultant.
Yeah, so
not a strategic plan. Yep.
But without that strategic plan and start building that plan also built connections to people that did the work. And we're in another strategic plan with those same exact people right now, 7 years later. Well, 5 years later. But there's a business behind it. It's not just, hey, I want to help kids with dyslexia, or my daughter or my son is struggling, I want to start a program. It starts with that. It starts with that heart and that soul to want to be. But then understand behind that is funding, business models, business structure. It's a lot of that. And if you don't do it properly, that's why we see a lot of these things come and go in our community, because someone started it, they're doing it with their heart and their own money. Year or two into it, they like, you know what? This isn't paying me enough. I can't keep doing it with fidelity or thoroughness because I got to go to work, or I got to get this extra overtime or whatever that is. You know what I'm saying? And yeah, a lot of times, because we don't understand nonprofits and how that world works, and where are the nonprofit classes, right?
There's only right. Right.
How to do this. Well, I'm sure there are some in like colleges and stuff like that, but we're not running across them like we run across gym classes or whatever, right? Where do we learn this information? And that's one thing our chief and I said, let's figure it out. We know it exists because we've worked for them. We've worked for nonprofits. We've worked for organizations that's doing exactly what we want to do. Let's just figure it out. And let's commit to each other to figuring it out.
So for the funders who may be listening now, and our we've been very blessed that our program is going far and wide and folks from a bunch of different backgrounds are listening. But for folks who are interested in making impact in literacy, particularly in Philly and South Jersey and the Camden area, how is it that they can reach out to you and be a support to Fathers Read 365?
On our website, FathersRead365.org is where you could find us sharing what we do, and all of our social media handles are there, or ways that you can get in contact with us.
And all of them are FathersRead365 on all social media platforms. That FathersRead365@gmail.com is a general email that we both will receive information from. If you want to donate, there's a donate button right there on that website. But also, if you want to learn more, because I don't know if we got in too deep about exactly what the program is and what we do, we've kind of touched on it. But if they want to reach out, the social medias is great. The website is even better. The email will get you right to us.
So, you know, we're going to close up soon. So, yes, we have touched on different aspects of the program, but if there's anything else you want to share to make sure that our audience is really clear about what y'all are doing, please let us know.
So Fathers Read 365, the elevator version of it is Keith and I was just trying to figure out how we could help in our community. We said, hey, let's start reading in daycares and inviting dads in. And we did that. And by doing that, we started realizing, because we would give out 3 books to kids who would answer the 3 questions that we would answer from the 3 books we read. And we would get the 3 books out. And then you would see an uproar because 3 kids got a book and 30 kids didn't, or 20 kids didn't. And as we started to do it, because our idea was, let's build this organization with the community we're serving. We always worked in agencies where they came in and said, hey, do this, do that, do this. Here go the pictures of the kids. They'll buy into it because we're acting like we're serving them. We know what they need best than what they know. We decided, hey, we need to build with our community to be able to best impact it. So what we realized was, oh, no one's giving out books in these communities, right? There's a huge book shortage in our community. We started figuring out how to get books and start giving out books. And we came in, we read for 30 minutes to a half an hour. We showed that we invite families in. We show them a fun, engaging way of reading with kids. We do an active reading training within that. We do dyslexia awareness. We do diabetes awareness. And we always leave the kids with what we call dad bags now. They get books in there and they get some resources around early literacy. We've been doing that for 7 years now. We've given out, by the end of this year, we'll be right around 300,000 books donated in the Philadelphia area just by us two. We started.
Wow. Hold on. We got to pause. That is a lot of books. Wow.
Yeah. And it literally started from us going to other, just say organizations who were supposed to be giving out these books, and we were, and they were saying, hey, we can't get rid of them. Get a book to us. We would take them in our cars and we would give them all out. We were stacking books. Akeith stacked way more books in his house than I did. Like his whole basement was, we had thousands of books in our house, in our cars, everywhere. And we said, hey, we need this book bus. We wanted a book bus. We had this idea. Vanguard came along, got a connection with them. Vanguard, we love working with Vanguard. They've been a blessing to us. They funded our book bus. So it took us about 5 years to give out 100,000. 2023, we gave out 100,000 in 1 year through the book bus. And that's also when we developed what we call our Ready First Network. Currently in Philadelphia, we've networked 180 daycare preschool centers under our umbrella to, one, give them books, but also other resources. We're currently now working on a program where we could be a little more intentional in the curriculum around what they're doing with best practices and also supporting their families. But we're literally using these centers as a basis to go in and start helping with the most impactful resources that we can for the parents, the centers, and the children. And Ready First stands for Reading Empowers All Developing Youth. The first stands for we want all our babies by the time they enter first grade to be on a first grade reading level, but it's also because parents are their first teachers. So that's the Ready First program. That's Fathers Read 365 in a nutshell. While we were doing all that, we shot a documentary, Reading is Love, which was a finalist in the New Jersey International Film Festival and is currently being worked on for distribution throughout all major platforms across the world.
Wow. Yeah.
And I'd just like to add, for anyone looking, and you, Winifred, you had touched on it, you know, just how you can be all over the place, nonprofit. We want to give back. We want to help. Whenever you get to these positions, you see a place where you can make a difference. You want to help. And sometimes we could do more, try to do more than we need to. And I think that's what we learned from our program officer at William Penn Foundation, who is also one of our, you know, our biggest funder to date. But she told us, because we were like, oh, yeah, you know, we touched 80 centers, you know, this year. She was like, no. How about we say 10? You know, and she told us how, like Brent said, how we can acquire more funding, but how you have to get started. So this is really for anyone who, whether it's in dyslexia, whether it's in mental health, whatever it is, that when you start, you know, and Brent mentioned it too, is working with the community. So just make sure you get in there, keep working. And when you stay in the work, those opportunities will come, but you don't have to have this big grandioso idea. It's like, okay, what do I want to focus on? And really put your time and effort into that. And eventually it will grow if you choose for it to do that.
Wow. So we always close out with a bit of advice, but you just laid out some advice to those aspiring social entrepreneurs, those nonprofit owners. Is there any other advice you want to give out to the audience?
I would say, just piggybacking on what I keep. Well, one, stay consistent. One of the first things Akeith and I did was we made a full-time commitment to this, to each other, to do this work, and just to stay committed to the work. Everything else will come, but let's figure out how to do the work. So everything else is important, funding and all that good stuff. But if you don't have a plan and aren't working a plan, ain't none of that stuff going to come anyway. Partnerships are beautiful, right?
That's right.
You can't do this by yourself. You won't be able to do this by yourself. So, and partnerships are tricky. don't just be jumping on with everyone, but make sure the person that you're working with or people that you're working with have the same integrity and want for the impact that you guys are trying to create.
Yeah. You know, as y'all were talking about, you know, distributing those books, as I drive through communities, I see, and I'm not, you know, not going to poo-poo on other folks' programs, but I see, you know, folks that have taken books and got them outside in the rain on little shelves and, you know, and like hoping someone's going to come by. Like, for the folks who are listening, who are really passionate about giving – and addressing this issue around literacy, particularly in the geographic area that these brothers are covering. I'm highly encouraging y'all to reach out to them, go to their website, press that donate button. You know, I don't know if it's handing off some books would be helpful. What did you say it was? Was it the book bus? What was it?
We have the Fathers Read 365 book bus.
Book yes. bus. All right. I want to take a ride on the book bus. I need to take a photo on the book bus. I need to
come
see what's
on,
going
do some
on.
Drops with me, brother. Come on
okay,
out.
Okay. All right.
We be out in the right. streets giving them books.
And what I'll say, LaDerek, is we don't take on book donations. We actually redistribute the books. So we do have a vendor that we work with out of Pensauken. A gentleman by the name of Larry Abrams, he runs Book Smiles. So we always say, you know, if you did have books to donate, Larry is the individual that could take that on because, again, you have to know what you're good at.
Right.
We did the taking on books, but that was time consuming. Store and then pack and then redistribute. So now, you know, it's just creating processes for yourself. And I just wanted to leave with real quick, you know, when you're talking about nonprofits, you know, it is a business. And how Brent and I got funding, you know, big time funding right away, we are under a fiscal sponsorship.
Yep.
So make sure you look up fiscal sponsorship. That's where you are partnering or collaborating with another organization who has our organization was 50 years standing at the time with tax records, audits. So when you are under a fiscal sponsorship, those individuals will take a portion of whatever funding you're bringing in. Or if you wanted to be a standalone 501c3 nonprofit organization, you could take on all that funding, which we're currently in the process of working out now.
Yeah. All right.
Yeah. And for just if you're trying to figure out what our chief is saying, if you're a little guy coming out and you're trying to get some funding or maybe possibly a funder wants to give you some money, they're not going to give you, say, more than $3,000, $5,000, maybe up to $10,000 at how you currently exist. They want to see tax returns, right? They want to see tax returns. They want to see that you have a history of dealing with money, taking it on, and using it properly. So the reason why we got the fiscal sponsor is it came with a 50-year history. It came with a board that was well-respected. And the day we got with them, we could take on larger amounts at that moment. Before then, we were getting fed like $3,500 here and a couple. Not bad, but it's nothing that you could build a lasting organization on. But eventually, after doing that for some years, everyone will be different. If you grow to that, you probably will want to venture off and become your own nonprofit. However, coming out, there's no way we are where we are today without coming out in our first, I would say we hooked up with them in our second year with our fiscal sponsor. There's no way we'd have been able to make it without them. So that's a nice little tip people can use.
Yeah. Well, brothers, thank you so much for taking the time and sharing with us about the work that you're doing. This was a great conversation. And from the tips on social entrepreneurship and explanation of the program that you're providing and the diversity of program you're providing, thank you so much for just being a part of the Black and Dyslexic podcast. So there you have it. Another episode of the Black and Dyslexic podcast in the books. Please join us next time for more engaging conversations. Thank you so much.
Tune in next week, where we'll continue to bring you lived experiences and more unfiltered conversations with experts in the field around all things Black and Dyslexic. Make sure you subscribe and follow the Black and Dyslexic podcast, where we educate, empower, and equip Black and underrepresented minorities. The Black and Dyslexic podcast is partially funded by Morgan Cares and the Center for Urban Health Disparities Research and Innovation, awarded by the National Institute of Minority Health and Health Disparities. The Black and Dyslexic podcast is sponsored by Dyslexia Advocation Incorporated, a 501c3 charitable organization located in Baltimore City, Maryland, whose mission is to equip parents of children with dyslexia and other language-based learning disabilities with the necessary tools to help their children become successful readers. You can find them on the web at www.soallcanread.org.